What is up, everybody? This is the Sharp Angles podcast, the Sunday recap edition of the Sharp Angles podcast, last one of the year, actually, for us. This recapping the championship games, the AFC and NFC championship games, an exciting day of football. We actually got a really exciting day that kind of lived up to the hype, at least the hype that I had in my mind. The Ravens game didn't go quite as I expected. We'll talk about that later, and I'm sure I will get some roasting from the other people on this call. But let's talk about those other people on this call before we get into everything. We have Tucker Bagley and we have Curtis Hirsch, and I guess the 49ers game, I turned it off. Does anybody still have it on? Apparently there are some timeouts being burned, but we're assuming here that the 49ers have won and that we're going to have a 49ers and Chiefs game. So I guess let's off the top here, Curtis, what are your overall thoughts coming out of this day? Like I said, an actually good day of football. It was really an exciting, fun day.
Yeah, my initial takeaway is, can we make sure we have Greg Olsen calling more games? I read somewhere that this might be his last game. I don't know. There's a stark difference between him and Tony Romo. So can we have Greg Olsen calling the games from now on? What a fun day of football. It was entertaining. Like you said, the first game went a little bit differently than probably most people thought it would. But the Chiefs kind of proved why he can never count them out. I don't think they were the better team going into the game, but they had a better game plan. They won the game. They executed better. And then in the second game, great, great game by the Lions. They had them where they needed to. They made some mistakes. The couple of drops from Josh Reynolds, the putt, the touchback, they could have had them at the 1 yard line. I agree with Dan Campbell's most of his choices. That's how they play. That's what they do. So I don't think that affected the game at all, but just the misexecution of a couple plays, a dropped interception as well. They just didn't execute. They had the 49ers where they wanted them, man. The tough thing is they now lose Ben Johnson. They're about to sign Jared Goff to an extension. If you were ever winning, it was now.
Yeah, I think that actually what you brought up is the key takeaway from today is just mistakes. The two teams that lost today lost because of their own mistakes, of mistakes that they made. And that's not to take anything away from the Chiefs and the 49ers. Obviously, two of the best teams. The 49ers have been one of the best teams all year. The Chiefs have the best coach quarterback combination since Brady Belichick. They are the rightful and worthy heirs to that kind of dynasty that we saw. And so, yeah, well, we got Travis Kelce too. I mean, like, yeah, we got it all. So I'm not taking anything away from those teams. We'll talk a lot about those teams for sure. But this was a day of mistakes for the losing teams. And we saw that in the Ravens game, and we saw that in the Lions game as well. It was more egregious in the Ravens game. I think the Ravens were actually the better team in that game, where I don't know if that was the case for the Lions. But this was definitely a day of mistakes, Tucker.
Yeah, and I think for the Lions, it was just more startling because of how that game started for them. But, I mean, for me, it all kind of changed with their decision to kick the field goal at the end of the first half, which – I thought at the beginning, if you're Dan Campbell and if you're the aggressive guy, why not go for it, right? Like, why not try to go up three touchdowns? You know, San Francisco starting with the ball to start that second half. You're the aggressive guy. Let's go for it, right? Like, let's see what we can do. Let's see if we can really, really step on their throats before halftime. And they didn't. And you know what? They put them up three possessions. That's fine. You're up 17. I don't think a lot of people are going to complain, but then I thought it was weird when they were up 24-10 and they had a similar situation. Then they decided to go for it. Like, you were so content taking a three-possession lead 10 minutes earlier in the first half. Why don't you feel that way now when, you know, the field goal was certainly a little bit more automatic than wherever they were? I think, you know, around like the 30 or so, they weren't necessarily in prime position for a touchdown, even if they picked up the first down. And then to do it again when you have a chance to tie the game, I get they're aggressive, but I just thought the inconsistency in the logic of when they were being aggressive, I just don't think made a lot of sense. But Curtis brought it up. I just think they looked like a team that kind of panicked once things started to go. And I tweeted out once the comeback started, it just felt like an avalanche. And the Lions didn't have anybody who could step up and make a play. And it kind of, when they played the Rams in the wild card round, the offense sputtered, but the defense made enough plays. They got the interception at the end of the game to really seal it, and it was fine. And this game, it just felt like the defense couldn't do anything. Once they started running those play action passes, once they started getting, you know, those guys open over the middle, their defense was kind of helpless and their offense was struggling. And it felt like the moment at that time, once their confidence was shot, felt a little too big for the Lions. And you know, where do they go from here? If you're losing Ben Johnson, if you're paying Jared Goff, I mean, this is a team as great as they were for most of the season. I don't know if they were built for longevity. So moving forward in 2024 and beyond, as horrible as this night's going to be, and as much as people in Detroit probably don't want to think about it, do you have better days ahead? Is this a season that you can look on and say, man, you know, that was really the start of something? Because I don't know if it is, based on the situation they've kind of backed themselves into, you know, moving into 2024 and beyond.
Yeah, and I want to save that just a little bit for, we could talk about the Lions like in kind of that future, because it is very interesting. You both brought up the things that are going to happen here in Detroit, likely to happen here in Detroit, that are going to create a very kind of, I guess, murkier future than you might expect coming off of this being the team on the rise this season and actually meeting those expectations, which is something that the teams on the rise don't often do. And the Lions certainly deserve to be commended for that, is that they met their expectations of being the team of the summer. Oftentimes that team, AKA the Chargers most years, oftentimes that team doesn't actually meet those expectations. The Lions certainly, you know, certainly did, and they deserve that credit, but it is going to be an interesting future. I'm in this game, I think your point about the halftime and not going for it is interesting, because I think most people would expect Dan Campbell in that situation to go for it. The one pushback I would have on that, one of the benefits from going for fourth downs down close to the end zone is that even if you don't get it, you're forcing the other offense to take snaps in their end zone, essentially. You don't have that at the end of the half, and so it's not as advantageous to do that from just like a pure analytic perspective. So maybe that played some role in it. But yeah, it wasn't, you know, the Dan Campbell thing. And when we talk about the other fourth down attempts that they had that, you know, weren't successful, one of them on the Josh Reynolds drop, one of two really bad Josh Reynolds drops in that third quarter swing, you say, you know, kind of what when we're trying to say, okay, why are they doing that? We're saying, well, that's Dan Campbell, that's who he is. And you brought it up, Curtis, that way that they play, that Dan Campbell aggressiveness that he's imbued into this organization as a, you know, he's not, in the last few years, he hasn't really been as involved on defense. He's not involved on offense at all. He's a CEO coach that is leading, you know, this team and building a culture and building an organization. And that is who they are. And they live by the sword and die by the sword. Today they died by the sword. And sometimes that's going to happen. But I find it really hard to criticize the Lions for going for it in those situations, because I think we all felt, as soon as we had that Ayuk catch and then we had the fumble right after it, it felt like, okay, this game is going the other way and they have to try. And that's, unfortunately, it didn't work out for them, but I'm going to have a hard time really criticizing Dan Campbell for those decisions based on that. Now, a decision that I have no idea what they made is that run at the goal line in the fourth quarter with David Montgomery that failed, forced them to take a timeout, forced them into the onside kick that ultimately ended the game. And that is a confusing decision. And I don't understand kind of how Campbell has been so good at game management and so good at kind of when making those aggressive calls and going for things. That decision, Curtis, that one really sticks out to me as a very confusing decision. They probably lose anyway, but that decision is really odd.
Yeah, we're still probably watching the game right now if they don't do that, because they could possibly stop CMC three times. He's banged up, so it might even have been Elijah Mitchell trying to run the ball. So maybe Ben Johnson had a press conference to get to tomorrow that he couldn't back out of. So maybe he thought running the ball was good there. That was the one of the weirdest calls you're going to see, because no matter what, if they're going forward on fourth down, throw it, stop the clock, and you've got those three timeouts. You've done so well to preserve all three timeouts. So that I would like to hear the decision, the rationale behind that decision there. I know they've ran the ball well all year. It doesn't matter. You just can't do it. Even if you're confident you're going to get that thing in 98% of the time, you need to throw the ball there just to have that timeout, because no one gets an onside kick anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the onside kicks just don't work anymore. So yeah, I agree. That was an odd decision. You mentioned running the ball. They had success. We transition here to the 49ers side of it. They had success running to the outside for most of this game, as we all thought that they would, because we've seen the 49ers struggle in this area, you know, throughout the season. That's one of the things that really helped the Lions jump out to this lead. And so that's a concern for the 49ers as we move forward. Another concern for the 49ers is this still didn't feel like the Brock Purdy that we saw for large chunks of this season. Now, he finished with 8.6 yards per attempt, so the final numbers look good. He finally started making plays with his legs, which I think we've talked about this before, how it's odd to me, based on the player we saw in college, that he does not run more than he has so far. That changed tonight. He made plays with his legs, and he got the offense moving, and he certainly deserves credit for that. But Tucker, the Purdy that I saw in the first half and for a lot of this game, even on the throw that the long Ayuk catch that probably should have been an interception, like, it's not the same as we saw kind of earlier in the season. And I'm a little, even as we're heading into the Super Bowl here, I'm still a little concerned about this offense, despite Debo being healthy, all the talent they have. It's just, it wasn't quite right today for this offense for much of the game, I think.
No. And I think we've talked about this quite a few times in recent weeks, and it's unbelievable that this is kind of the floor for the 49ers, right? Like, we can talk about their quarterback not playing well. We can talk about their offense not looking right for, you know, most of the first half. And they've done this throughout the season. There are a number of games where they were maybe tied or trailing an inferior team at the half, and they come out in the third quarter and just absolutely boat race them. And they kind of did that with Detroit today, right? They go down 17 into the second half, and within 12 minutes, the game's tied, and, you know, they take off from there. But you're right. It's just, it doesn't look like he's fully in control, right? Which is something I think we saw a lot from him last year leading up into the NFC Championship game, and really for most of this season, save for that weird three-game losing streak in the middle of their schedule. But it looks right now like there are plays to be made. He is making some tremendous throws, but he's not really taking command of the offense on a snap-to-snap basis the way he was at different parts throughout the season. And that is something that going up against a pretty darn good Chiefs defense and a Chiefs secondary that played well against Baltimore today, an offense led by Lamar Jackson, who, you know, is going to be named MVP in about a week. It's going to be a much tougher matchup, I think, for Brock Purdy. And it'll be interesting to see kind of how he reacts and what him and Kyle Shanahan can dial up with an extra week of preparation here.
What's more concerning is the fact that they were down two touchdowns early. This is a defense that has given up how many yards to wide receivers all year, and Kyle Shanahan was still fine just running CMC up the middle for 2.8 yards a carry, and they weren't letting Purdy throw it, and that was weird. So that I think that's the concerning part. Purdy didn't look good, and they weren't trusting Purdy to... If there's a game you're going to let Purdy cook, it's against the Detroit Lions. Just go out and throw the ball. Last week, Todd Bowles, of all coaches, had Rashad White run the ball 9 times, and CMC had 20. So it's an important number for anyone who is watching. But if you were ever going to just tell CMC to have a day off, this was the opponent, and they did the exact opposite. They rode CMC all game, and it did not look like they had a lot of trust in Purdy. Purdy didn't look comfortable. The Ayuk catch was what it was. And yeah, and you've got the defense that has a really good secondary, but unfortunately they're weak against running back passes in the run. So that things are pointing upwards for the 49ers next week, as long as CMC is healthy.
Yeah, that is kind of an odd subplot of this, is that maybe this Lions defense was actually as bad as the Lions defense has been all season. Maybe this Lions defense was quietly set up okay to play the 49ers because they can stop the run. They've stopped the run successfully all year. I mean, McCaffrey still had 4.5 yards per carry. He had that long run at the end that set up an Elijah Mitchell touchdown that really iced the game. And so McCaffrey had success because he's Christian McCaffrey, and that's what he's going to do. But I do think that maybe, you know, that's a little bit part of this as well. And that is going to be different as we move into the Super Bowl with this Chiefs defense. The Chiefs defense is able to stop passing games, stop number one receivers. Like they are amazing at number one receivers. I know Zay Flowers got loose a little bit today, but they've been very good against number one receivers all year. And so it is going to be a bit of a different situation. And so that'll be something to watch for sure. I know we kind of hinted at this at the start. And so I don't know if y'all have any more takes here on the Lions, but I do think that when we talk about them moving forward, that is the interesting conversation here with the Lions coming out of this game. It's a tough loss for Detroit. It's a fan base that probably doesn't need another tough loss. They deserve probably better than this. But as we look forward, I mean, the defense is not good. They're going to need to find ways to improve that. They don't have a ton of free agents. At least when I looked at the list, it didn't look like they have a ton of free agents, but they're likely going to lose the entire offensive coaching staff. We know that the coach is more of a kind of CEO coach. I think he's a very good coach, but he's not going to be someone that's going to be able to just kind of pick up the reins on offense. They're going to have to find someone else to run this offense. There is a chance here for some pullback. And it's such an odd thing, Tucker, coming out of this season with the Lions to look at it and go, okay, but are we going to see them in this position moving forward? It's tough. I'm going to trust Dan Campbell because I think Dan Campbell's a very good coach, but it's an odd situation they find themselves in here.
Yeah. And I found myself rooting for the Lions today, right? Like that's a fun story. The Lions are harmless. I don't think anyone's team has ever been victimized by the Lions. Like it's a team that I don't think anyone has any qualms with. They're like the Chicago Cubs. Like it's cool to watch them win sometimes. And yeah, I mean, moving forward, it's funny. One of the big storylines throughout the game was how great the rookie class is, right? Guys like Gibbs, Laporta, Brian Branch, and Jack Campbell on the defensive side. Like they do have young talent on this roster. And I do think there is a number of places where you can see, you know, growth moving forward in 2024 and beyond. But I mean, losing the offensive coaching staff is tough. Having, you know, to look at a Jared Goff extension is going to be tough. And I look at a team like the Eagles, right, who, you know, maybe overachieved a little bit last year and certainly did through much of this season. And through losing their coordinators, through losing a lot of the coaching staff, not having that continuity and not having someone in the building who can, you know, fix the offense necessarily. I mean, them hiring their next offensive coordinator is going to be, you know, probably one of the most important moves across the NFL this entire offseason. I mean, whoever they decide to pick and whoever they decide to install in that position and fill out the rest of that coaching staff, that's going to be huge because this offense has been one of the most explosive, one of the most fun offenses to watch this entire season. And they really carried a defense that was subpar for most of the year. So, I mean, that's just going to be a huge thing for me is even if we look at their depth chart and their roster and say, hey, it's not going to be that bad. They aren't losing a lot of talent. I think losing Ben Johnson to Washington or wherever it may be, that's going to be a really, really tough loss for them that, you know, maybe gets swept under the radar at certain points throughout the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking as if he's already gone. I mean, the reporting has been, I believe Jeff Darlington of ESPN said it's a foregone conclusion that he will be the Commanders coach. Obviously, that's not done. I actually think he's taking an interview with the Seahawks. Dan Quinn
is taking an interview with the Commanders tomorrow, but maybe that's just psychological warfare because the Commanders are two steps ahead of everyone now, just to throw some more problems into the Cowboy fire. But also the Lions have to deal with the Packers are on the come. They've got some young players that are really good, and you've got a Chicago Bears team with a number first overall pick, draft capital, cap space, so their division gets really good.
I think that we mentioned this at the after week 18. I think we were talking about this division. This division has a chance to be one of the better divisions moving forward with what we saw from the Packers. Obviously, both teams from this division that were in the playoffs pushed the 49ers to the brink in back-to-back weeks. The Bears are, we assume, we'll have a rookie quarterback, and so that kind of changes things, but that team, that roster is quietly, you know, pretty good, and that team probably makes the playoffs or has a chance to make the playoffs this year if Justin Fields stays healthy. And so, yeah, it's suddenly the Vikings. I mean, the Vikings bring back Kirk Cousins. When they had him, they were a pretty good team as well. And so they've obviously got two young, good receivers. Well, I don't know how. Is Justin Jefferson young anymore? He's just the best. They have the best receiver, and then they also have a young receiver that's promising, right? And so, yeah, that division is going to be something moving forward. And it's that makes it tougher as well. Assuming, again, they lose Ben Johnson as they go, but they could make another great hire at offensive coordinator. I do think it's interesting that we're talking about Johnson in this way, that that's how good he has been as offensive coordinator. That's how much people trust him. Wherever he ends up hired as a head coach, whether that's this year or moving forward, there will be no questions about it. Everyone will go, yeah, no, that makes sense. I'm glad that we got this guy. That's the level of coordinator he's, you know, advanced himself to. And so, yeah, I think that that's really telling of where this offense has been. Anything other thoughts on this game as we move forward? Maybe some 49er thoughts as we head in here to the Super Bowl. We ready to go to Chiefs and Ravens? No,
no. I mean, I just...
All right, let's...
The only thing I would say is I'm really interested to see what the Chiefs do against this 49ers defense, because it's clear they have one glaring weakness, and Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes have 2 weeks to prepare for that. I'm very curious to see that chess matchup and what San Francisco does to maybe fill those holes.
Are we going to see a not hurt, allegedly, Kadarius Toney running jet sweeps? A can't hold on to the ball, Mecole Hardman running
jet sweeps? I don't think he's playing another game in the NFL ever, Kadarius Toney. This is the second team that sent him off.
Yeah, no, it's not promising when you're making those allegations against two teams in a row. I am interested. I think there was a small change made in the second half of this game where they played Armstead outside more. I wonder if that was a reaction to these struggles, but they've had these struggles literally the entire year. Like, if you look at the 49ers against outside runs, this has been an issue for them for the entire year, and has been especially an issue for them since the Chase Young trade. And so I mean, they had to have known going into this game, especially after what Aaron Jones did last week, that this was an issue. And so there might just not be adjustments that they're able to make. They might not have the personnel to make the adjustments and maintain the pass rush and, you know, stop that. And so that will definitely be an important thing moving forward.
If I'm the 49ers, I want the Chiefs running the ball against me. Go ahead. That takes the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands. Go outside, run your way down that keeps the game close. It keeps the game low scoring, like Kyle Shanahan likes. And it just, yeah, go ahead, run the ball.
I can't wait for all of the, you know, all of the people that watch the Super Bowl that don't normally watch football to see Isaiah Pacheco round the corner for the first time with his high stepping knees, just pounding the ground like he's angry at it. They ask us a bunch of questions about why does that guy run like that? We go, we don't know, but he's good. So we're not ask any questions about it. Let's go on here to the Chiefs. I wrote it here in the doc that we have. The Chiefs are inevitable. They are Thanos at this point. You cannot stop them. They were not good for large parts of this year. The offense was not good for large parts of this year. We thought maybe they got a little lucky with their draw with the Dolphins and Bills and the issues they had as an injury perspective, from an injury, you know, perspective on defense. Then they came out against the best defense in the league throughout the year. The Ravens allowed the fewest yards per pass attempt in the regular season. They allowed the fifth lowest completion rate in the league this season. And Patrick Mahomes in the first half was 20 of 25 for 161 yards with a touchdown. They dominated time of possession. They had 11 more minutes of time of possession in the first half. They ran 21 more plays. They absolutely dominated the game. Patrick Mahomes was amazing in that first half. And it's just another thing. I mean, if you just have one of these transcendent quarterbacks, one of, you know, a Hall of Fame, going to be in the conversation for greatest of all time, I mean, that papers a lot of cracks, Curtis. And what we saw in the first half from Patrick Mahomes was really impressive.
Yeah, he's not in the conversation. He's there. This is Super Bowl 5 in 7 years, and I still go back to the one he got robbed of because of a call that Tom Brady got. And today he was 14% completion rate above expectation. So again, if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'll give the ball. Let Pacheco do his damage. I want the ball in Pacheco's hands, because Patrick Mahomes, the decisions he made today were unreal. If there was the one Kelsey catch where Mahomes is spinning around and somehow he throws it backwards and Kelsey makes that, like, those two, if you let them dial up plays like that, I don't want that. So they magically snapped their fingers and had that chemistry again. So we're like, oh, what are they gonna do, just magically get good? Yeah, they did. They somehow found a way to to dial it up. It's
can y'all remind me of this next year
when I'm MBS catches the ball? Like, what, now he decides to catch a ball? The biggest pass of the year, and he just goes
There was some poetry in that, because that MVS drop was one of those, like, one of those turning points where people said in the regular season, where people said, oh, maybe there is something really wrong with this offense. And now he catches the ball to send them to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's poetry in that. It was just this come full circle moment. And we were worried about the Chiefs. I specifically talked a lot about my concern about the Chiefs way back to like week two of the season. And I feel I was justified in that. I'm not even like eating crow. I was justified. They were not good. And then against the Bengals, they said, okay, we're just going to throw the ball to Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce. Both of them had Travis Kelce in the playoffs, I believe, has a 30% target share, and Rashee Rice is like 27.5. We're going to only give the ball to Isaiah Pacheco because Jerick McKinnon's on IR, and this is how we're going to run our offense. And they decided that against the Bengals. It worked in that game. The scoreboard wasn't great because they had some kind of issues in the red zone, but it worked in that game. It worked against the Dolphins. It worked against the Bills, and it worked against the Ravens. And now here we are. They made that adjustment, Tucker, and the Chiefs are in the Super Bowl. There we are.
Yeah, I mean, Travis Kelce was left for dead like 6-7 weeks ago. No way he's going to come back. He's a shell of him former self. 11 catches on 11 targets.
Taylor Swift ruined football because
unbelievable, right?
Remember that fun
11 for 116 absolutely shatters Jerry Rice's record. I mean, you mentioned like Kelce and Rice are their two receivers. Mahomes was 19 for 20 targeting those guys today. He was 11 for 11 for going to Kelce, 8 for 9 going to Rice, combined like 160 yards. Kelce had that touchdown at the beginning. And what's crazy is like the Ravens defense played well in the second half, right? Like they shut out the Chiefs in the second half. I think they forced like 6 punts to end the game. Like the Chiefs offense didn't really move the ball a whole lot, but just kind of didn't matter by the end. And that's just how I feel about Patrick Mahomes. Like even games like this where the offense didn't look great for 60 minutes, it really only looked good like for the first 20, doesn't matter. He's inevitable. And when we talk about best quarterback, I just don't think he belongs in that conversation because he's above everybody else. Like the idea that he's compared to people like Tom Brady or Joe Montana, I think he surpassed them. Like he's in a whole nother category where we compare him to someone like Wayne Gretzky, who in his prime just wasn't even compared to his peers, right? Like he's playing a different sport than everybody else. And I think through 7 years, it's painfully obvious that as long as he wants to play football, the Kansas City Chiefs are going to be on top of the AFC.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to push back on both of you on that. I mean, we've had some very, very good quarterbacks throughout our lives. That might be a conversation for later. But, I mean, very clearly, Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league right now, and it looks like he's going to be that way. By the way, I mentioned Taylor Swift. I love that we got a lot of her on the field after the game because, by the way, most wives and girlfriends are on the field after the game and people are still getting mad about it. I love it. It makes me so happy that they get so triggered by Taylor Swift. I mean, she's just living her life. Leave her alone. I do think the important thing you mentioned there was like after halftime, it was not so great. And Mahomes was still like 10 of 14. So it wasn't like he was awful, but they averaged just 3.3 yards per play. And we've seen that from the Chiefs in games. Think about that Dolphins game where they went up 21-0, right? And they still just held on to win that game. We have seen that in the second half of games from the Chiefs when their offense wasn't as good as it is now. So it was interesting that happened. And as I brought up, as we transition here to the Ravens, as I brought up at the beginning, when I was thinking about, okay, what's my overall takeaway? I mean, the Ravens probably should have won this game. They have a fumble at the goal line that is recovered by the Chiefs. They have an interception in the end zone. They are driving, in both of those situations to score touchdowns. It's going to make it very close. It's going to put the onus on this Chiefs offense to actually have to deliver. And maybe things would have been different if the Chiefs had been pushed a little more and the Ravens don't make those mistakes. But looking at this game, I feel like the Ravens really let them off the hook with their mistakes, with some of the penalties that they had, with a lot of the kind of emotional things that were going on. And if I'm the Ravens, Rich and I mentioned this on Thursday, this was their best chance that they've had in the Lamar Jackson era. That doesn't mean they won't get back. That doesn't mean they won't have another chance, but this was the best chance they had. And if I'm a Ravens fan, Curtis, I have to feel as if they let this one slip out of their fingers more than the Chiefs took it from them.
Yeah, I think so. Lamar Jackson, he's going to win his second MVP. But when we look at it, he's not Patrick Mahomes. There was decisions that he made today with the ball that just can't be made in games like this. And that is the reason why he's got the playoff record that he does. There was once when he on third and one, he took a sack of like 5 yards and magically they got it on fourth, went for it on fourth down and converted. But even that could have been a huge mistake. And then when Rice fumbled the ball, that's not obviously on him, but then the emotions got the best of that team as well. And then the throw to Isaiah Likely and to every Chiefs defender imaginable.
Oh, like, that was a tough one.
You cannot make that throw. I don't know. Now this might be a thing. This one might haunt Lamar because they should have won today. They were probably good enough to win, and because the defense, did the Chiefs score a single point in the second half? I don't know if they did.
No, they shut them down. I believe they didn't score. They scored
Lamar. You go 10 in the second. That was some points. You can win this game, and he didn't do it. He didn't execute, and that's on Lamar. That we've always talked about the Ravens having better weapons this year. When it comes down to it, and you're throwing to guys like Nelson Agholor and a 33-year-old Odell Beckham, maybe they do need to upgrade those still a bit because they just didn't have it. And then the coaching staff too to start that without not running the ball and going up against the Chiefs secondary. So it was such an intriguing game all around from the Ravens side that if they could have a mulligan, they would really like to have a mulligan. And I think they would do a lot of things differently, Lamar and the coaching staff. It's just one of those.
Things different. You brought it up, the running game. Like Gus Edwards had 3 carries in this game. He had 20 yards on those 3 carries. Yeah. It wasn't like game script was away from him. The most they were down in this game was 10 points.
Yeah,
it wasn't like they were struggling. They just didn't run. And it was wasn't the part oddest of the
game
thing.
Plan. And what have they been watching? What film were they watching? It's like, it was one of the weirdest games the coaching staff fumbled the ball and the players didn't execute. And that's how you lose as a 5-point favorite.
Yeah. And I mean, we look at this situation. It's kind of odd for us on this Sharp Angles podcast, part of Sharp Football Analysis, to be calling for a team to run the football more. But Warren Sharp, actually, by the way, Warren Sharp, he will be doing a lot of Super Bowl betting information. You go over to sharpfootballanalysis.com. You can find out how to get that. But Warren Sharp, you know, he's not known for saying teams should run the ball more, but it was so very clear in this that they needed to run the ball a little bit more than they were doing. They needed to get Gus Edwards involved. It wasn't working with Justice Hill, to be fair. And Justice Hill had been their lead back, but it seemed like that could have certainly helped maybe calm things down as we were going in the second half and those mistakes were happening and we saw the emotional things happening. So Tucker, why didn't they? Like, what? It was a very confusing thing in the second half. Any thoughts?
Yeah, it felt like their offensive game plan made little sense, right? And a lot of people are praising, you know, Steve Spagnuolo. And I thought the Chiefs defense certainly played well, but yeah, I mean, if you're the Ravens, if you're a Ravens fan, you wake up tomorrow and you're blaming the offense, right? Like, they lost this game because the offense was bad. And maybe that was play calling. Maybe that was the game plan just wasn't right for this game. And they did get outcoached by the Chiefs. But, I mean, the biggest thing to me is they turned the ball over 3 times, right? Like, they let Kansas City hold the ball for 15 more minutes. They still outgained them, still averaged more yards per play. They were still more explosive, even with all these issues they had, and, you know, just as disjointed as they looked, that you could argue that their offense still played better than what Kansas City did, but they turned the ball over 3 times. They struggled to really, really, you know, keep it under wraps and keep their emotions in check in the second half. And it just felt like once Kansas City was up, you know, 17-7, and it was, you know, the middle of the fourth quarter, that was it. Like, I felt if Kansas City got one more score, whether if it was a field goal or a touchdown to really push that lead, I didn't think they could come back. And the offense just really didn't look like they were the team that we've seen leading up to this game, where, you know, they dominated the Houston Texans in the second half, right? We talked about this last week, where they went up against the Texans team. We said, well, they were kind of rusty in the first half, but they absolutely boat raced them in the second half. They just wilted in the second half today. And, you know, they committed, I think, 8 penalties for like 90 yards by the end of it. And just you could see how emotional they were and how frustrated they were. But it's just weird. As much as we love Patrick Mahomes and talk about it, I think the Ravens had an incredibly winnable opportunity here to take the crown of the AFC and move on to the Super Bowl and finally, you know, get over that hump and, you know, have Lamar Jackson shed that reputation he has of folding in the playoffs. And unfortunately, I think what happened earlier today is only going to reinforce that.
Moving forward, I mean, you kind of brought it up, Curtis. What, you know, when you think about what the Ravens need to do this offseason, I mean, it's going to be a much different spring. We're not going to have a Lamar Jackson drama. His cap hit does go up next year, but it's $32.4 million next year. It's not like, it's not at that level where it really caps your spending. Their salary cap situation, though, still isn't great. They've got some free agents on defense. I believe Madubuike is a free agent. Patrick Queen, I think, is a free agent. Clowney's probably a free agent because Clowney's a free agent every year. I don't know if he's allowed to sign multiple year contracts. And so they've got a lot of that going. Both of their running backs are free agent, Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins. Odell's headed back to free agency. I like Zay Flowers a lot. I like Zay Flowers a lot more than I like Zay Jones as a receiver. But I like Zay Flowers a lot. Rich and I kind of got into a little married fight about this on Thursday a little bit. I like Zay Flowers a lot. I don't know if he's like the true alpha wide receiver one. Yeah. I think he's going to probably end up more in that kind of Brandon Cooks range, which is a very good player and a very good receiver. But I would love for them to go out and get like a true alpha. I don't know if that's in the first round. This is going to be a crazy good wide receiver class if the scouts are to be believed. So even when they're picking in the first round, there's probably going to be someone like that. I don't know if they're going to have the cap space, especially if they want to bring back some of those stars on defense to go after someone like Mike Evans, or is Mike Evans going to be willing to chase a ring and take a little less? I'm not sure. But I think they definitely need to get another receiver in here, and they need to get serious about the running back position, because both of those things felt lacking in this game and for really this team all season. And take some of that pressure off Lamar Jackson and, you know, give him, continue to build this offense and continue to build these weapons. When I'm looking at the offseason, Curtis, that's really what I think should be the focus.
Yeah, and they're probably going to be looking for a new defensive coordinator as well, because I'd assume...
Well, there's only two jobs left.
Of the two jobs left. Okay, and if Seattle does not sign him, like one of Chicago or Philly has to go back on their word and go get this guy, right?
Yeah, please let Mike McDaniel be a head coach. He's very good. Let's let him be a head coach, please.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting offseason. Derrick Henry, maybe you're a Baltimore Raven. I don't know. It's going to be what do you build with around Lamar Jackson? You're right. Zay Flowers is a good receiver, but he's not a alpha wide receiver. So you can get him the short targets, but he's not used where you can get him open down the field a lot, or at least they didn't this year. So Rashad Bateman is not that guy. He conceded snaps to Nelson Aguilar today. And yeah, they still need receiver help, but that's definitely, I noticed that today. And I said that earlier in this, we talked about how much better this receiving core is, and yet it's still below average. They'll have to figure out a way to just play Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely on all snaps. They're going to have to go back to a 12 personnel team.
That's so damning of the 2022 Ravens receiving core. When you look at this receiving core, Odell doesn't even play. When he does make plays, to be fair to him, but he didn't even play. Nelson Aguilar is playing a ton of snaps, and we're like, this is so much better than it was in 2022. And it's so damning of what that receiver core is. What about you, Tucker, kind of moving forward? Are you in the same boat of where they need to go?
Yeah, I mean, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Like, and it's not for a lack of trying, right? Like, they've poured a lot of resources into this position. They've brought in a lot of guys of different profiles. Like, they've drafted with high draft picks like Zay Flowers, like Rashad Bateman. They've brought in, you know, not necessarily high price, but big name wide receivers like Odell Beckham Jr. Like, they've brought in veterans who should, you know, bring stability, and it still just hasn't worked. Like, it's just been a black hole for that franchise. So, yeah, looking forward, you know, Lamar Jackson's going to win MVP because of what he did with really the lack of talent around him and the way he drug this team to where they are and where they finished today. But I mean, if I'm him, if I'm the front office, you have to think about how can we make this guy's life easier to where he doesn't have to do so much work in the regular season. When we do get to the postseason, you know, he has easy completions. He has guys who he knows can get open, because that'll make his life a lot easier. I think that'll, you know, weird to say that the MVP can take his game to the next level, but in the playoffs, he needs to take his game to the next level and needs to be able to win these games if he wants to be considered in the, you know, top echelon of quarterbacks, which he is. But I think they need more help on offense, because the defense today I thought was phenomenal. What we saw defensively, if you told them, hey, you held Patrick Mahomes to 17 points and you outgained them by, you know, 20 yards, you'd probably go home saying, oh, we clearly won that game.
No, absolutely. And I do think, like, when I think about, like, what this could look good, Mike Evans really sticks out to me. Because if you can get that Mike Evans, say, Flowers combination, that looks really good. That looks a lot more like what they've got in, you know, Philly and that situation.
And Isaiah Likely.
I get excited, like, about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Isaiah Likely's in that, and Mark Andrews is in that. Yeah, that could be really nice. That's kind of quietly what they might have in Houston, by the way, with Nico Collins and Tank Dell. I don't want to get too ahead of myself here, but that's going to be a very interesting combo moving forward. Speaking of getting ahead of ourselves, we've mentioned a little bit, a few of the things we're thinking about heading the Super Bowl matchup between the 49ers and the Chiefs. The 49ers are currently favorite in that. They're 2.5-point favorites. They're -135 Kansas City. Oh, it's down to 1.5. Thank you, producer Matt. Has moved down to 1.5. That's not surprising to me that people would be willing to go in again on Patrick Mahomes as an underdog. The 49ers money line down to -118. Still, that's going to jump around. I mean, I think this is obviously going to be a game that's between the threes. It's going to finish there. It's going to be hard to call a favorite in this one. Totals 48. That's actually an interesting number given how good the Chiefs defense is and how good the 49ers defense can be. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting game. Any other early thoughts, Tucker, other than kind of what we've discussed about the Chiefs running game against this defense, kind of the 49ers, what are they going to do? Anything else?
I'm just excited. Like, I know a lot of people have Chiefs fatigue and might not love the 49ers, but as far as I'm concerned, these are the two best teams. I mean, the 49ers have been the best team in the NFC from the jump this year. I know the Chiefs have had issues, but we've talked about Patrick Mahomes and how inevitable he is in the postseason. I mean, this is the best player in the league going against probably the best team in the league on the biggest stage. I don't know. I know there are a lot of people who are sick of the Chiefs and they're sick of Taylor Swift and they're sick of the 49ers. I'm really excited for this matchup. I think if you had to pick the two teams that you would want to see in this situation, it would be these two.
Well, maybe the Cowboys, but
yeah,
Cowboys, Browns.
That's a lot. I would have rather seen the Browns. Yes. The Browns story would have been a lot of fun. That's a heck of a thing coming from an Eagles and Cowboys fan that they'd rather see the 49ers. I think that I'd rather see the Ravens with the 49ers. I think the Ravens were a better team, unfortunately, and they lost. So that is what it is. But yeah, it's a very good matchup. We have the preeminent kind of offensive coach probably in the league and Kyle Shanahan going against also maybe the preeminent offensive coach in the league and Andy Reid. Andy Reid has a much longer history of that. We've got Patrick Mahomes, you know, trying to continue to create this legacy that he is creating, this argument he's going to have for being the best quarterback ever. We've got, can Kyle Shanahan finally win the big game? Can he finally get over the hump? He's been close now twice in the Super Bowl, once with the Falcons, once with the 49ers. Can we finally get there? There's a lot of fun storylines here. You know, Brock Purdy going against Patrick Mahomes, all of the endless conversations we're going to have about Brock Purdy and how good he is over the next 2 weeks. Yeah, I think this is a really fun matchup. I would have liked to see the Lions in there just because it's fun. But I mean, these two teams, I think, are a tier above where the Lions were this year. And it's going to be fun to watch it, Curtis.
Yeah, I would have liked to see the Ravens. And because I think this is a perfect matchup for the 49ers. The Chiefs are weak against the run, and that's a Kyle Shanahan thing, and running back passes. So CMC is the elite player for this matchup. And then the 49ers' weakness is outside run, so taking the ball out of Patrick Mahomes. So Kyle Shanahan, don't soil yourself and just get out of your own way. And I think you can probably win one here. But again, it's the Kyle Shanahan moment. Somehow he will find a way to choke on the big game. It's going to be interesting because that's the one big advantage I'm going to give the Chiefs is just the game decisions of Andy Reid.
Which is crazy to hear.
Andy Reid is crazy.
He
actually went for it on fourth down early today. I thought he was going to kick a field goal. So hats off to Andy Reid for going for it on fourth down early on in the game. And yeah, advantage Andy Reid.
Yeah, I'm very interested in this Andy Reid, like the Renaissance. It's actually promising for Kyle Shanahan that Andy Reid had this stigma attached to him, mm-hmm. that he kind of came up short in the big games and his game management was bad. The game management part of that's certainly true. And now here we are with Andy Reid rightfully being considered one of the best coaches of all time, because he is. And he has been even since his Eagles days. He's been one of the better coaches. But yeah, that's really interesting. And we have producer Matt here, rematch of Super Bowl 54. I'd completely forgotten that. That 49ers game, that Jimmy Garoppolo throw, was that against the Chiefs? Is that what?
That had completely
slipped my mind that that was the case. Was that Mahomes' first Super Bowl? I don't even have the storylines in my head.
I think they were down 10 with 10 minutes to go, and they reeled off 21 straight to win.
Fascinating. I'm really hopeful that this game, the Super Bowl, is 28-3 to somebody heading into the fourth quarter. That's my dream scenario. What? Sorry, Falcons fans. That would be wonderful. All right, that's it for us. That's it for us for the season. We're all going to be at Super Bowl parties. We won't be doing a recap after the Super Bowl. We will have some podcasts here over the next couple weeks. On Thursday night, we'll have an early look at props and DFS from Adam, Todd, and Ryan. So check that out. I'll hop on with Rich and Warren at some point to do a Super Bowl preview. And then after the Super Bowl, Ryan McChrystal and I, we're going to start talking about the draft. We're there, man. We're almost to the draft. It's time to almost switch into draft season. We're going to have a ton of Super Bowl content starting tomorrow, starting on Monday. We're going to have a ton of Super Bowl content on the website, sharpfootballanalysis.com. Like I said, there will be Super Bowl betting information available to you at the Sharp Football Analysis. Go and check that out. We're excited what we have coming up over the next 2 weeks. And Tucker Curtis, it's been fun recapping these games all year. We made it. We're here. The Super Bowl's here. So I appreciate that. And we'll be back to talk with everybody soon.